So let us start with our dedication to the six Goswamis. You can repeat after me. Hopefully you know where to find it now. I need to unravel this thing. Nana Shastra Vicharanai Kanipano Sadharma Samstapako
Nana Shastra Vicharanai Kanipano Sadharma Samstapako
Lokanam Hitakarino Tribhuvane Manyo Sharanya Karo
Lokanam Hitakarino Tribhuvane Manyo Sharanya
Radha Krishna Padaravinda Bhajana Nandena Mataliko
Radha Krishna Padaravinda Bhajana Nandena Mataliko
Vande Rupa Sanatana Raghuyago Sri Jiva Gopalako
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 Please forgive me, this is a rather ridiculous system, unfortunately. Now it all gets tangled. Fantastic. Oh, just ridiculous. What now? How to do it? This way. Yeah. This is the way. Okay. Hari Bol. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the six Goswamis, namely Sri Sanatan Goswami, Sri Rupa Goswami, Sri Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, Sri Raghunath Das Goswami, Sri Jiva Goswami, and Sri Gopal Bhatta Goswami, who are very expert in scrutinizingly studying all the revealed scriptures with the aim of establishing eternal religious principles for the benefit of all human beings. Thus they're honored all over the three worlds, and they're worth taking shelter of because they're absorbed in the mood of the gopis and are engaged in the transcendental loving service of Radha and Krishna. Sri Sad Goswami Prabhu ki
Jai.
Srila Rupa Goswami ki
Jai.
So last night, for those of you who were here, we first focused on was that definitive verse. What is pure devotional service? Anyabhilashita shunyam jnana karma janavritam anukulyena krishnanu shilanam bhaktir uttama. Devotional service, if it is to be pure, it has to be free from jnana, meaning impersonal philosophical speculations, karma, meaning materialistic religiosity, adi, other peripheral religious, quasi-religious, marginal types of activities like hatha yoga and so on. And then anya abhilash, any other type of desire which is materialistic and which is not connected with Krishna. And then on the other hand, the activity has to be for Krishna, which includes his expansions and his pure devotees, or his devotees, actually. Yeah. So that's a definition of pure devotional service, and seeing Nectar of Devotion is all about devotional service and how to render it and different types of it and different levels of it. So it's an excellent idea to be aware of what is pure devotional service. Then we went through the characteristics of pure devotional service. There were six. So anyway, we went through them. And then we went into chapter two, which was introducing the idea of there being different levels of devotional service, and particularly brought our focus onto sadhana bhakti. Sadhana meaning practice, to practice in the sense of learning and, yes, developing your devotional service and trying to go deeper into devotional service and become situated better in devotional service. This is all the idea of sadhana bhakti. Whereas bhava bhakti and prema bhakti, they are not part of practice in this sense. They're two parts of perfect devotional service, beyond practice. So then we gave you those lists of verses, the list of verses, and we saw the definition of sadhana bhakti in a general sense, like an overall definition of sadhana bhakti, and the potentiality of it. And this is a slightly unusual word, you don't really come across much in common usage, but the potentiality, the possibility for success being there in practice, the possibility that you could make progress is there because Krishna consciousness is in the heart of every living entity. It's not to be acquired from an external source. It just has to be brought out, like facilitated, you could say. And the example, I'm sure you remember, the example was of a child learning to walk, that every child learns how to walk just because it's part of the human condition. Children do not need to go to school to learn how to walk, and if they don't go to the school, they will not learn how to walk. It's not like that. Prabhupada elsewhere gave other examples, like an example, I'm sure it will touch a spot in your hearts, that Prabhupada gave was that young boys and young girls, as they grow up, they become attracted to each other. And they don't need to go to school or some training program to learn that. It just happens. Because again, it's just part of the human condition. It's just built in. And at a certain point, when the system is ready enough, then it starts coming out. Okay, so that was the idea about sadhana bhakti. In other words, you're not just practicing, studying, learning, and in that way improving yourself in devotional service, but you're just facilitating the manifestation of what is already there within you. It's a very important point. And then we briefly talked about two types of sadhana bhakti. One is vaidhi sadhana bhakti. Vaidhi means according to rules and regulations. And the other is raganuga. Raganuga. Well, the translation, the common translation is spontaneous devotional service. And Prabhupada said that, we read that, he said that after following the rules and regulations for some time, then a person may come to that level of being more spontaneous. And a simple example was given of in a person's early days in Krishna consciousness, things like getting up early in the morning, and even things like following the four regulative principles, people may feel a little shocked and not really want to just embrace these things. But if they're interested in Krishna consciousness, they may do it okay. If the spiritual master says to do it, if Bhagavad Gita says to do it, okay, I'll do it because I want to be Krishna conscious. But after some time, some attraction arises. And then they're happy to get up and they spend a lot of time meditating, thinking how to improve their devotional service, and they enjoy it greatly. There is a lot more to the subject, actually, of Raganuga Sadhana Bhakti than just that. And that we'll go on to, I don't think this evening, but at least tomorrow evening, we'll go into that. So this brings us then to chapter 3. Do you have any of the books still available, or are they already gone? Oh, all five are still there?
There's three, yeah.
Three. We've managed to bring three more copies of Nectar of Devotion at discounted prices. Extremely heavily discounted. Just see Mukundangri Prabhu, there he is on the corner there. And if you, I mean like right now, and then you can get one for only 75 rand, am I right? Yeah. And it will help you as we go through things this evening, because like last night, we'll be referring to this paragraph and that paragraph and, you know, actually locating where certain things are said in the text. So let's have a look now at chapter 3, eligibility of the candidate for accepting devotional service. Because remember, here we're talking about the beginning stages, learning, practicing, trying to get into it. So the very first consideration is who may be eligible for starting or accepting the process of devotional service at all. as opposed to people who may not have that eligibility and therefore may not start, and they just remain in material existence. So, first paragraph there, you can see this is a like a very foundational part of the picture of how a person who is not a devotee may come to the point of accepting starting devotional service on account of his association with Mahatmas or great souls 100% in the devotional service of the Lord. One may attain a little bit of attraction for Sri Krishna, but at the same time, one may remain very much attached to fruitive activities, material sense enjoyment. Anyway, okay, first point is, though, association of devotees. Yeah. Without that, nothing is really going to happen. So now, the next thing we'll go into, and actually we'll go into a little more, is you'll see in the second paragraph, Prabhupada refers to a Srimad Bhagavatam verse, 11:20, verse 8. And it is on your verse sheet there, the actual verse itself. And the translation there is, it actually makes a little clearer what is the point that is being put across. So here's this verse, 11:28, spoken by Lord Krishna himself. Yad richaya matkatado jata shradastu yapaman na nirvino nati sakto bhakti yogosya siddhida. If somehow or other by good fortune one develops faith in hearing and chanting my glories, so this is Krishna speaking, such a person being, note carefully, two things, being on one hand, neither very disgusted with, or second, nor too much attached to material life. So such a person should achieve or can achieve perfection through the path of loving devotion to me. Yeah, I would love to walk around and wave my arms around, but I am a prisoner here. So now, first point we could note here is that the word, this word yadrichaya, is what has been translated in the translation itself. If somehow or other by good fortune, yeah, actually yadrichaya specifically or literally means by good fortune. So what is that good fortune, devotees? Is it just like the luck of the draw? You won the lotto and another person got, I don't know exactly how they do it, but one number wrong, and they didn't win it. Is it that sort of good fortune? No. It means what we just read right at the very beginning there in the first paragraph. On account of association with Mahatmas or great souls, advanced devotees, this is the good fortune which is being referred to here, not just some good luck or something of that sort. And also not, although some people they may not quite get the idea, it also does not mean by Krishna's mercy. Hare Krishna. Sorry to say that. Because Krishna is merciful to devotees. When people are not devotees, Krishna basically leaves them to their, you know, whatever, just their karma and their material desires. But on behalf of Krishna, the devotees go and introduce people to Krishna consciousness. And in that way, that's the good fortune that they may become a little attracted to hearing about Krishna. Yeah. Now, I'm not going to go into that. It's an interesting subject. I'm not going to really go into it in any depth, but this is, let me just say, this is the idea in this sense, that Krishna gives his mercy to the devotees, but the devotees, they go beyond what Krishna himself is willing to do, and they take his mercy, which they have received because they're devotees. They take his mercy and give it to others. Yeah. Krishna may, out of his mercy, direct a person as the super soul in the direction of devotees. He may do that. But it's actually through contact with devotees that, as the verse says, that by that good fortune of association with devotees, one develops some faith in hearing and chanting about Krishna. And then, very crucial point, it's really a very crucial point also, such a person who has now had some contact with devotees, and maybe a little, I mean, really a little bit of attraction to hearing and chanting about Krishna may have manifested. That person, ideally, for it all to work as effectively as possible, the person should be neither very disgusted with material life, nor very attached to, attractive to material life. Now, what's the problem if a person is like severely disgusted with material life? The problem is, well, you know, they might do something extreme like commit suicide. That's a possibility. They might go insane. They might take up some extreme sort of crazy process. Or the real problem, the biggest problem is they may become impersonalists. Yeah. And just, you know, had it with material life. And in this way their hearts become hard, because they just want to just reject this world and everything in it. And when they get some nice prasadam, like, what was it, rice with something, spinach, was it? And chickpeas.
No
chickpeas. Spinach.
Small beans.
Oh, and the black-eyed beans, or peas, or beans. Okay. And particularly some ice cream with carob topping. They may think, what is this? This is sense gratification. And if there's some nice kirtan and, you know, very sweet, they think, what is this? So they reject material life, but they also reject Krishna consciousness because their hearts have become hardened, because they're so disgusted with material existence, just reject everything, including spiritual things which are like engaging material things in the service of the Lord. So therefore, if a person is too disgusted with material life, too anti the material world, it can and sometimes does become like a real obstacle to becoming a devotee. Yeah. And of course, on the other hand, I think it's pretty obvious, if someone is just too attached to material enjoyment, then obviously they're not going to really be able to get into devotional service. So it's an interesting point. It's an interesting point. There has to be at least some element of balance and not too much of either extreme. Like you may know in Bhagavad Gita chapter 6, verse 16, what does Krishna say? All you bhakti shastris and people like that. I can't even remember the Sanskrit, but Krishna says that one who eats too much or eats too little or sleeps too much or sleeps too little. Well, actually, what does he say? That a devotee who does not, am I right? Yeah. I think it's a devotee who does not eat too much, eat too little, who does not sleep too much, sleep too little. Such a devotee can practice yoga and can become free from misery through that practice. Yeah. So Krishna's advocating some, like a degree of balance there, and not too much of the extreme either way. And we might be surprised and think, if someone's really disgusted with material life and they, you know, like violently opposed to it practically, then we might think, well, that's a qualification. But it can become a disqualification. So such a person who's like that, getting good association, and particularly developing faith and hearing and chanting about Krishna, Krishna says they should be able to achieve perfection through the path of loving devotional service. Okay, so that's, now we were talking about the fundamental basic qualification for someone starting devotional service, taking up the process, accepting devotional service. So now we go down to the next paragraph, paragraph 3, and Prabhupada talks about, again, a very interesting subject. There are different levels of devotees. Three levels. Let's just quickly read through what Prabhupada says. The devotee in the first or uppermost class is described as follows. He's very expert in the study of relevant scriptures, and he's also expert in putting forward arguments in terms of those scriptures. He can very nicely present conclusions with perfect discretion and can consider the ways of devotional service in a decisive way. He understands perfectly that the ultimate goal of life is to attain to the transcendental loving service of Krishna. And he knows that Krishna is the only object of worship and love. This first class devotee is one who has strictly followed the rules and regulations under the training of a bona fide spiritual master and has sincerely obeyed him in accord with revealed scriptures. Thus being fully trained to preach and become a spiritual master himself, he is considered first class. The first class devotee never deviates from the principles of higher authority, and he attains firm faith in the scriptures by understanding with all reason and argument. Yeah. So, in other words, one who's attained a mature determination in the matter of devotional service can be accepted as the first class devotee. There are two particular sort of features of the consciousness of such a devotee, which are mentioned here. Degrees of which, of these two factors, kind of distinguish the different levels of devotees from each other. First is knowledge and understanding and realization. And second is faith. These two things. Let's read about the second class devotee, and we'll see again knowledge, faith, degrees of these things are mentioned here too. The second class devotee has been defined by the following symptoms. He's not very expert in arguing on the strength of revealed scriptures, but he has firm faith in the objective. The purport of this description is that the second class devotee has firm faith in the procedure of devotional service unto Krishna, but he may sometimes fail to offer arguments and decisions on the strength of revealed scripture to an opposing party. But at the same time, he's still undaunted within himself as to his decision that Krishna is the supreme object of worship. So you see, there is strong faith, less actually than the first class devotee, but still it is strong. But there is a real shortage of knowledge. So Prabhupada, describing the first class devotee, Prabhupada said that he's expert in putting forward arguments in terms of the scriptures, very nicely presents conclusions with perfect discretion. This is first class devotee. Second class devotee, in some situations, will not be able to do that. So what does he do? Does he just, you know, give up, or just say, well, I'm defeated, you know? No. At least if it was a discussion, he would say, you know, I'm not sure about this point, but I will check with someone and get back to you. You see? Well, then go to someone who does know, get the information, and come back like this. And then in the next paragraph, the neophyte or third class devotee is one whose faith is not strong. Yeah. And who at the same time does not recognize the decision of the revealed scripture. The neophyte's faith can be changed by someone else with strong arguments or by an opposite decision. Unlike the second class devotee, who also cannot put forward arguments and evidences from scripture, but who still has all faith in the objective, the neophyte has no firm faith in the objective. Thus he's called the neophyte devotee. So, you know, the Sanskrit terms are, as I'm sure so many of you are aware, for the first class devotee is Uttama Adhikari, the second class devotee is Madhyam Adhikari, and the third class or the neophyte is called Kanishta Adhikari. Uttama literally means Uttama, beyond ignorance, beyond the modes of material nature. Madhyam, of course, means middle. And Kanishta basically means sort of materialistic. So then, and if you were listening or reading carefully, you would have seen that the main characteristics which were emphasized, as we mentioned, were knowledge, degrees of knowledge and degrees of faith. Yeah. Then Srila Prabhupada goes on for the next so many paragraphs. If you look at the next paragraph, further classification of the neophyte devotee is made in Bhagavad Gita. There are four types of people: distressed, in need of money, inquisitive, and wise. What verse in Bhagavad Gita is this, devotees? Devotees? Almost. That was really close. 7:16, yeah. Chaturvada bhajante mam. Make a note of that. 7:16. Because the next some number of paragraphs are going to be discussing this and these four types of people specifically. Chaturvada bhajante mam janasukritanarjuna arto jigyas or artarti gyani cha bharatarshaba. O best among the bharatas, four kinds of pious men begin to render devotional service. Again, here's this idea: beginning, starting, accepting. Yeah. Four kinds of pious men begin to render devotional service unto me. The distressed, the desire of wealth, the inquisitive, and he who's searching for knowledge of the absolute. In the next paragraph, is it? Yeah, it's the next paragraph. Examples of are given of each type. Just, it's interesting. Dhruva is mentioned first. Which of the four categories is Dhruva in? He wants wealth. You know, in the verse, the distressed is mentioned first. But here now Prabhupada mentions the person who wants wealth first was Dhruva. He wanted a kingdom bigger than his father's. Then next, he mentions Gajendra, the elephant. Where do you find the description of Gajendra? Sorry? 8th canto, Srimad Bhagavatam. Gajendra the elephant was distressed. He was caught by a crocodile while in a lake, out of his natural environment, and in the crocodile's environment. So gradually the crocodile got the better of him, and then he prayed in his distress, he prayed for mercy, and the Lord appeared and saved him. Then, let's see here. Next is the four Kumars, and they're considered to be the fourth category, the wise people, the wise ones, which is the fourth category according to the verse from Bhagavad Gita. And then the sages from Naimisharanya, headed by Shonaka, were inquisitive. Right. And, you know, to tell you the truth, sometimes the four Kumars and the sages in Naimisharanya, sometimes they're interchanged because they can arguably be in either, you know, or both, the inquisitive or the wise categories. But anyway, that's just a little bit of interesting information. So now, let's see here. Not the next paragraph, but the paragraph after it. Are you with me? Lord Krishna, however, has explained in the Gita that out of these four types, the one who is wise is particularly dear, better than the others. And not only that, Let's see. Okay. Not the next paragraph, but the one after that, without being elevated. Do you see that? Without being elevated to the position of a jnani or wise man, one cannot stick to the principle of worshipping the Supreme Lord. You get the idea? What he's saying is that they may all begin, those four categories, the distressed, those who desire wealth, the inquisitive, or the wise, they may all begin. But if those, if the distressed, the desire of wealth, and the inquisitive do not become wise, they'll fall away in due course. Yeah. They have to come to that platform of having a real interest in the Lord, developing a real understanding, and like a mature determination that I want to serve the Lord. Otherwise, if it's just a matter of being distressed, the problem is that when you're distressed, you may turn to the Lord, but when the distress is gone, and the only reason you've turned to the Lord is because of distress, but now the distress is gone, you're going to turn away from him. You get the idea? Yeah, it's a simple point, but very important point. And we sometimes give the example of a person who's running out of petrol. Then, you know, they're desperately looking for a petrol station. And then they find one. Oh, how wonderful. And they fill up. And away they go. But then, it's not that they then stop in at the different petrol stations here and there, or come back to that petrol station just because it was nice. We liked the view. No. Because now they have no need in terms of how they see things. So a person who is only approaching the Lord because he is distressed, no other reason. When the distress is gone, he has no reason to approach the Lord. So he will say, thank you, Krishna. Very good. And if I get into distress again, I'll give you a call. Don't worry. But for the time being, see you later. You see, and even someone, so there are gradations. The distressed and the desire of wealth, they're kind of equal on the lowest level. Inquisitive is a little better, somewhat better, but there's a problem in just being inquisitive, in that after a while your curiosity, your inquisitiveness may be satisfied, and then you may become inquisitive about something else. We looked into Hare Krishna, okay, all right, not bad. But, oh, let's look into Sai Baba now. Oh, that sounds interesting. But when a person actually wants knowledge, and they actually endeavor to increase their knowledge of the Absolute Truth, then they come to understand, yes, Krishna is the Absolute Truth, and he becomes the goal of their lives, and then they can make progress. Okay, so that was discussed there. Let's see now. Okay, in the 14th chapter, how's that? 14th chapter, where is that? Okay, I think it's the chapter, let's see. It's this, as stated before, I think it's that chapter. Yeah. Or maybe it's the chapter after that. 14th chapter, I said. This is now going back to address this point about being too disgusted with material life or too attracted to. Or in other words, attracted to liberation, impersonal ideas, mukti, or attracted to just material enjoyment, which is bhukti. And I think, I hope, on your list of verses, you have, you do, look at that. Bhukti mukti spriha yavat pishachi riddhi vartate tavad bhakti sukhas yatra katam abhyudayo bhavet. The material desire to enjoy the material world and the desire to become liberated from material bondage are considered to be two witches, and they haunt one like ghosts. As long as these witches remain within the heart, how can one feel transcendental bliss? As long as these two witches remain in the heart, there's no possibility of enjoying the transcendental bliss of devotional service. So in that very first verse, there's this idea you don't want to be too frustrated with material life, or, of course, too much attracted. That being too frustrated is being particularly applied to people who, on the basis of frustration, they just decide they want liberation, salvation, just get out of material life. And in classic impersonal terms, that normally means merging with the Brahma Jyoti, becoming one with God, this sort of idea. That is mukti, and then just your ordinary attraction to material enjoyment is bhukti. So bhukti and mukti are described in this verse, which comes from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, and it's quoted there. We've given you the reference, I hope. Yeah, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, they're considered to be like two witches. Yes, what would you say? Like backdoor priests. Is that possible? Tikalosh, maybe, or something weird like that. Witches, you know, witch meaning some mystical being who can just bewitch you and you just become bewildered and just entranced in a very illusory space. Yeah. So, now, interesting point is that the next two chapters are dealing with these two subjects. In fact, the discussion about not becoming too fascinated with liberation, I mean, the discussion in the form of many verses being quoted, to establish this point, it actually begins in the last four paragraphs of this chapter. You'll see there, or last five paragraphs. Look at the last paragraph in this chapter. In Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th canto, 9th chapter, verse 10, King Dhruva says, "My dear Lord, the transcendental pleasure derived by meditation upon your lotus feet, which is enjoyed by the pure devotees, cannot be approached by the transcendental pleasure derived by the impersonalists through self-realization. So how can the fruit of workers, who at most can aspire to promotion to the higher heavenly planets, understand you? And how can they be described as enjoying a happiness similar to the devotee's happiness? So chapter 4 is titled Devotional Service Surpasses All Liberation. And you know what it is? It is simply a collection of verses which state that devotional service is better than impersonal liberation. Let me just read the very first one in the first paragraph of chapter 4 from the fourth canto of the Bhagavatam, who is at Prithu Maharaj, prays, "My dear Lord, if after taking liberation I have no chance of hearing the glories of your Lordship, glories chanted by pure devotees from the core of their hearts in praise of your lotus feet, and if I have no chance for this honey of transcendental bliss, then I shall never ask for liberation or the so-called spiritual emancipation." You get the idea. We are, by just reading that, we are, so to speak, taking a grain of rice from the pot and squeezing it, you know, to find out, okay, how is it? This whole chapter is simply a collection of verses like that. So you know what we're going to do? We're going to go on to the next chapter. Because, you know, we're just doing an overview. We're not doing an in-depth study. But if you want in your own time to study this chapter 4, you read through it. I mean, it is very important. And you'll see that this is what is discussed. And then chapter 5, the purity of devotional service. And what would impurity be? Attraction to material life. So whereas chapter 4 discussed mukti and how undesirable mukti or impersonal liberation is, chapter 5 is basically discussing how undesirable bhakti or material enjoyment is. Do you get the idea? So in other words, this is all expanding on that verse, the first verse we looked at, 11th canto, chapter 20, verse 8, you remember. Not too disgusted with material life means not impersonal, and then, of course, not too attracted. So that's the subject of chapter 5 then. And let's just have a quick look, though, at the beginning of the chapter. Now, we're in the first paragraph, second sentence. Next, Rupa Goswami states that devotional service is transcendental to all material considerations, bhakti, and that it is not limited to any particular country, class, society, circumstance. Nothing material, nothing to do with bhakti or material enjoyment. Now again, if you want to get into it, you'll find there's a certain amount of explanation by Srila Prabhupada, but then again he starts quoting verses which are making this point in different ways. Krishna consciousness is better than bhakti or material enjoyment. So you know what we're going to do now? We're going to go into chapter 6. Hari Bol. I don't know if you remember, you may not, but chapter 2 to chapter 5 are an introduction to sadhana bhakti. We mentioned that last night. So now we're on to chapter 6. And from chapter 6 to chapter 14 It's all about Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. Vaidhi meaning rules and regulations. So if you're going to do Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, practice devotional service according to rules and regulations coming from scripture, coming from the spiritual master, well, here they are. Here are all the rules and regulations. There's 64 of them. We're not going to read all of them, but we're going to read some of them. The first 20, we'll read the first 20 because they're particularly important, which means now in this chapter 6, is it the second paragraph? It is. Second paragraph. So, basic principles. One, accepting the shelter of the lotus feet of the bona fide spiritual master. Two, becoming initiated by the spiritual master and learning how to discharge devotional service from him. Three, obeying the orders of the spiritual master with faith and devotion. Four, following in the footsteps of the great acharyas under the direction of the spiritual master. Can you pick up? There's a bit of a theme running through these first four at least. And the fifth one too, inquiring from the spiritual master how to advance in Krishna consciousness. Six, being prepared to give up anything material for the pleasure of the Lord. And also being ready to accept something which we may not like to accept if it's, you know, going to be pleasing to the Lord. That was six. Seven, residing in a sacred place of pilgrimage like Dwarka or Vrindavan or ISKCON Midrand or ISKCON Lenasia. Oh, yes. Or many of your houses or flats. They're sacred places. In other words, if you can't live in Dwarka, Vrindavan, Mayapur, these places physically, make your place of residence Vrindavan. There's one family who I know in Spingo, where in their temple room, in the temple room, the only thing which does not have a picture of Krishna on it is the floor. I'm serious. The walls, from where the wall meets the floor, from that point, it's just pictures of Krishna. You cannot see the wall. And the ceiling, you cannot see the ceiling. It's just pictures of Krishna. Anyway, that's their attempt to make their home into a sacred place. Eight. Accepting only what's necessary or dealing with the material world only as far as necessary. 9. Observing the fasting day of Ekadasi. And 10. Worshipping sacred trees like the banyan, or most particularly Tulsi, actually. So, let's just continue reading. It's very important. These 10 items are preliminary necessities. How's that? Necessities for beginning the discharge of devotional service in regulative principles. In the beginning, if a neophyte devotee observes the above mentioned 10 principles, surely he'll quickly make good advancement in Krishna consciousness. So there you go. Certain other of the rules may not be absolute necessities, you know, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, but these are. So, but now there's another list of 10, which are also no less important. Note, I don't know if you noticed, the first 10, they're all, you could say, do's, things you must do. Now you'll see the second set of 10, they're all things you must not do. Okay, let's have a look. One should rigidly give up the company of non-devotees or not associate with non-devotees. Two, one shouldn't instruct a person who's not desirous of accepting devotional service. Three, one shouldn't be very enthusiastic about constructing costly temples or monasteries. Four, I mean, you might then say, why are we building this big temple in Mayapur? Well, you know, the sort of foundational reason is because Srila Prabhupada ordered us to do it. Yeah. For, you know, not just for the sake of having a costly temple, but for the sake of preaching to the whole world. And let's see, where are we now? Four. One shouldn't try to read too many books, nor should one develop the idea of earning his livelihood by lecturing on or professionally reciting Srimad Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Gita. Or things like, you know, even enthusiastically propagating that householders should all do all sorts of yajnas and, you know, this and that and different prayers and whatnot, even in Krishna consciousness. 1.5, one should not be neglectful in ordinary dealings. 6, one shouldn't be under the spell of lamentation and loss or jubilation and gain. 7, one should not disrespect the demigods. Sometimes our devotees, in the past at least, when they've been preaching, sometimes they get on the case of Lord Shiva and people like that. Yeah. It's not really the idea. 8, one shouldn't give unnecessary trouble to any living entity. 9, one should carefully avoid the various offenses in chanting the holy name of the Lord or in worshipping the deity in the temple. And I could just mention that from chapter 7 to, if I remember correctly, chapter 12. Anyway, chapter 7 onwards, shall we say, in the same order that these different principles are listed out here, they are all explained. Each one in the same order is explained. This one, number 9 here in the negative lot, about avoiding offenses, it has a whole chapter. I think it is a chapter 9. It's either 8 or 9. It's 8. Offenses to be avoided. So it's a big one. And then 10, one should be very intolerant toward the blasphemy of the Supreme Lord or his devotees. In other words, one should not tolerate. So you get the idea. First 10 are all things you must do. Second 10 are all things you must not do. And he goes on to say, without following the above mentioned 10 principles, one cannot properly elevate himself to the platform of sadhana bhakti or devotional service and practice. Altogether, Srila Rupa Goswami mentions 20 items, and all of them are very important. Out of the 20, the first 3, namely accepting the shelter of a bona fide spiritual master, taking initiation from him, and serving him with respect and reverence, are the most important. Okay. So that's 20. There are 64 altogether. And starting from the next paragraph, those 64 are listed out. And, you know, we're not going to read all of them. But, you know what we're going to do? We are going to just note the last 5. You know what you could do? You could have a look through the others, you know, 35, excluding the very last 5. If there are any there that seem particularly interesting to you, You could ask us at the end. We'll finish in maybe 5 minutes. And we could say a few words about some of them. Okay? Or even, you know, maybe when we start tomorrow evening, we could spend 10 or 15 minutes if you want to go through all of these and get a little further explanation on any of them. But right now, let's just look at the last five, which is beginning with number 40. One should do whatever is done with great care and devotion for the deity. Means deity worship, to be done very nicely. 41. One should relish the pleasure of Bhagavatam reading among devotees and not among outsiders. 42. One should associate with devotees who are considered more advanced. 43. One should chant the holy name of the Lord. And 44. One should live in the jurisdiction of Mathura. We just read that, didn't we? You remember? The explanation, and if you go through carefully and study and sort of compare them to each other, you'll find there is a little bit of duplication. Where there's duplication, either one is focusing on a particular aspect of that subject, and the other is focusing on a slightly different aspect of the particular subject, or it's just so important that it's being repeated. Yeah. So, and this whole list here, this is now coming from Rupa Goswami via Srila Prabhupada, but you might be interested to know that the list comes from Lord Chaitanya in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhyalila chapter 22, beginning with verse 115. Make a note of that, you can have a look in your own time, and you'll see Lord Chaitanya just lists the whole 64 out again, basically in the more or less in the same order. That's where Rupa Goswami got them from. This is not Rupa Goswami's sort of creation, but he got them from Lord Chaitanya. So Lord Chaitanya, when he comes to the last five, he lists them in a slightly different order, but he says some very important things about them. He says that, well, the way he lists them out is Sadhu Sangha, Namakirtan, Bhagavat Shravan, Mathura Vas, Sri Murtir, Shradaya Sevan, which is just the same five, slightly different order. But what Lord Chaitanya says, you know, Prabhupada here says, let's see, in the second to last paragraph. So the total number of principles is 64, as we've mentioned. The first are the primary 10, then there's the secondary 10, then there's 44 others, altogether is 64. But now out of these 64, five, these last five, are very important. And what Lord Chaitanya says, this is now Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhyalila 22, verse 129. Sakala sadhana shrestha e pancha anga Krishna prema janmaya e pancha Krishna prema janmaya e panchira alpasanga. These five limbs of devotional service are the best of all. Even a slight performance of these five awakens love for Krishna. This is a very important statement, which he then follows up with same chapter verse 133. Duru had bhuta virye smin, shradadure stu panchake, yatra swalpo pisambandha, saddiyam bhava janmane. The power of these five principles is very wonderful and difficult to understand. Even, listen to this, devotees, even without faith in them, a person who is offenseless can awaken his dormant love of Krishna simply by being a little connected with them. This is something very amazing. These five are so powerful that just a little contact with them, even if you don't really have faith in them, but as long as you're not offensive, can, he says, Krishna Prema Janmaya, can give birth to Krishna Prema. Alpa, apanchira alpa sangha. And the other verse says, yatra swa alpa. Alpa means a little. If you've been to Mayapur, you would have come across the word alpa. When they're serving you prasadam and they want to give you like a bona fide Bengali serving of rice, then you must go alpo, alpo, because it means small, little. Yeah. Actually, alpa means really small. It means like tiny, just little bit. And this is what Lord Chaitanya is saying in both of these verses. Just a little bit of contact with these five activities, even if it's not done so nicely, but it can immediately elevate you at least to the level of bhava. Saddiyam bhava janmane. And now, you know what I'm going to do? We just jumped over, you noticed, chapters 4 and 5. And you might have thought, wow, we just jumped over a couple of chapters. We're going to now jump over to chapter 14. How's that? Well, actually, no, we're going to jump to chapter 13. Hari Bol. What we've done, you see, as I said, each activity is then explained in the same order, starting with chapter 7 and just chapter by chapter, just going through all these 64 activities. If you want us to say something particularly on any one, in about 5 minutes we could say a few words, or you could go through and you could take a few out, and we can consider, say, a few words at the beginning tomorrow night. But now, chapter 13, five potent forms of devotional service, is this whole chapter is discussing these last five. Actually, in the previous chapter 12, they have been listed out and something has been said already. But because they're so important, now they're going to be re-emphasized in this whole of chapter 13. And in that regard, devotees, we have given you, haven't we, two verses regarding two of these activities. They're good ones. You know what I won't do? I won't read the Sanskrit, but let me just read the translation. So now, what Rupa Goswami has done, you have these five activities. He has written a verse about each one. So five verses, which are really bringing out how important and how extraordinary they are. And actually, most particularly, if you look at them, you'll see he's bringing out how it can, the activities can bring a person to bhava or prema. Let's have a look at this, the first one there on the list. My dear friend, if you're indeed attached to your worldly friends, do not look at the smiling face of Lord Govinda as he stands on the bank of the Yamuna at Keshi Ghat. Casting sidelong glances, he places his flute to his lips, which seem like newly blossomed twigs. His transcendental body bending in three places appears very bright in the moonlight. This is about deity worship. The Govinda being mentioned here is not like Krishna, you know, has just appeared from Goloka Vrindavan and he's playing the flute. This is the deity Govinda who's situated in a temple at or near, somewhere near Keshi Ghat. This is what he's saying. So he's saying, my dear friend, or even elsewhere Prabhupada puts it, my dear foolish friend. Yes. If you want to remain attached to friendship, material love, material family affection and all that, then I'm warning you, don't go and see Govinda. Don't go and see Nittai Gaurhari. It will be too bad. If you want to remain attached, now this sort of, we have to take a little jump forward ahead here. He is saying that if you do see Govinda, you'll just become totally detached from friendship, material love and all these things. Extreme detachment in a Vaishnava sense, not in the impersonal sense we were talking about, but that great detachment on the basis of attachment to Krishna is a symptom of perfection. It is one of the nine symptoms of bhava, which we're going to discuss tomorrow night. So you get the idea. He's not just... what he's specifically saying is, you are going to come to the level of bhava if you see Govinda. That's what's going to happen to you. And you'll come to the level of the bhava in the sense that because of being so attracted to Krishna, you will just lose your attraction to any material relationships. So you see, the idea, as Lord Chaitanya said, these processes can just elevate you sort of meteorically to the level of prema or bhava. This is what he's saying here. And then we gave you the next one, which is about the Bhagavatam. Isn't it nicely translated? Oh, idiots! How unfortunate you are! I think that you must have been hearing all the syllables one by one of the verses of the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, because your ears are now denouncing the most auspicious goal of dharma, artha, and kama, and even decrying the fourth goal of liberation, which is most blissful. You get the idea. This is another symptom of bhava or prema, that you're just not interested even in liberation. In other words, he's saying, he's a materialist, saying, you idiots, you are displaying symptoms of bhava. You must have been hearing the Bhagavatam, isn't it? That's what he says. I think you must have been hearing. He can see the symptoms and he thinks, aha, I've caught you. You have been hearing the Bhagavatam, you nonsense. Just like we say sometimes with someone who's like a perennial drunkard. Sometimes you find them and they're all, you know, heavily intoxicated. And you ask them, have you been drinking? No, not me. But you can see. So it's something like this. These devotees are just showing symptoms of just ecstatic Krishna consciousness. And the person is saying, you have been hearing the Bhagavatam, haven't you? Ah, caught you out. Okay. And anyway, in that chapter, the other three activities are also described. Right. Which, at least for the time being, brings us to the end of the discussion of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. Although, like I said, if anyone wants to ask about one process, now we could, for a couple of minutes, say something. Otherwise, if you want to go through the list, then we could have a look at a few at the beginning tomorrow night. Someone wants to ask about one? Yeah, just one. Okay?
Maharaj, it's more a question of, you mentioned how the four Kumaras are an example of being wise, and you read the verse, Bhukti-mukti,
Sprihayavat.
How did the four Kumaras, because it seems as though as soon as they appeared in the world, they rejected material existence completely.
Yeah.
How did they, what process did they use to come to the California period?
Okay, sure. Mm-hmm. See, what happened was they met Narada Muni. It's all there in the Bhagavatam, I think it may be the third canto. They met Narada Muni. He told them about the Supreme Lord. They were impersonalists, but they were Brahmavadis, not Mayavadis. There are two types of impersonalists. Mayavadis are like aggressive, they're anti-everything. The Brahmavadis, they just accept everything as Brahman. And so they're not really offensively minded. They were Brahmavadis. So when they heard about the Lord, they thought, wow, that sounds great. What a nice type of Brahman. We want to meet this Brahman named Krishna. And so they went. And then they met Jayan Vijay. Yeah. So that's what happened with them. That they heard from Narada Muni. And then they became inquisitive. Wow, who is this Narayan? Hey, let's go and see him. So in that sense, they're considered to be inquisitive. Okay. So any others we can have a brief look at tomorrow at the beginning. Otherwise, for the time being, Srila Prabhupada ki
Jai.
Hare Krishna.
He told you, Bhakti Chaitanya Swami Maharaj ki
Jai.